Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Ram Trucks, the ones with the guts to stand apart, join a league all their own. Guts, glory, Ram. And by Hyundai. Learn more at Hyundai.com.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy, episode 298 for August 6th of 2015. An automotive list to die for. Watch Autoline After Hours live at Autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific or 19 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Gary Vasilash, we find ourselves together yet again doing yet another Autoline After Hours.
It's good to do one.
It is. It always is. And we should let everybody know we've got Todd Lassa in the house with us today from Automobile Magazine.
Good to be here, John.
It's great having you here, Todd.
Thanks.
And, of course, we've got our special guest for today's program, the author of the book, 100 Things for Every Gearhead to Do Before They Die, Jason Fogelson. Welcome to joining us on Autoline After Hours.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So, what motivated you to go out and write a book about 100 things gearheads should do before they die?
Well, like you guys, I'm an automotive journalist, and so I get to go out and have a lot of experiences across the country. And I just really felt like I was gathering so many experiences, I had to share them.
So how do you define a gearhead versus, say, an automotive enthusiast or someone who just likes cars or someone who likes to take adventures? What's your definition?
Well, my definition is anyone who likes anything mechanical with wheels. So it could be motorcycle enthusiasts. They could be automotive enthusiasts, train enthusiasts, plane enthusiasts. And you've met them. It's somebody who just loves the idea that something is built by a craftsman and puts you into motion.
Now, did you have to experience all of these yourself before choosing them, or are you a certain number down that list toward 100?
I'm working my way toward 100. I'd have to say I'm at about 87 on this list right now.
Wow, that's a lot.
Good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, because I consider myself a gearhead, and man, there's a lot of things on your list here that I've never even been close to.
Wow. Well, which ones have you are you still looking to do?
Some of the things that I'd like to do pertain to motor racing. So, for example, I've never been to Pikes Peak. I think that's on your list, isn't it?
That is. It is.
Yeah, that's one I've got to get to. I've been to a lot of NASCAR races. I've never been to the Daytona 500. That's one I've got to do.
Well, we should go together. That's on my list, too.
Cool. That'd be fun to do.
I'd say Le Mans is probably – I've never been to the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and that's kind of a big one for a lot of people I know, and some have made it and others haven't.
So that didn't make your list, though.
This list is all things in the United States. I've got lemons on there. But
yeah, lemons. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I haven't done lemons either. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So – $500 for me is a lot. I'm an auto journalist, that's why. And I haven't been able to go to one of those yet, but I guess I was thinking of lemons. I easily got that mixed up with Le Mans.
Yeah.
So maybe we should walk through some of his categories that he's got on his list.
Sure, let's start.
So in the rides section, the first section of the book where you're talking about the roads that people ought to drive, I found many of those interesting, and I'm sure you guys have driven Tail of the Dragon.
I've done that.
I've done that.
Only once.
I've done it in the fog. Yeah. Try doing that in the fog. Yowza. You're going to go very slow.
Yeah. I did it in a Porsche Boxster, which was a lot easier than doing it in the fog.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But I'd like to go back. I'd like to go back with the family Miata with my wife and do that again.
Oh, that'd be a blast. I've done it in cars and on a motorcycle. And it's a really great road. I think they say 218 curves in 11 miles.
Okay, Jason, set the stage because we all know Tail of the Dragon, but a lot of people watching may not.
Well, it's just in North Carolina, just across from the Tennessee border, and it's a snaky, just like it sounds. It's this really roller coaster ride through some forest. There's very little runoff. There are a lot of elevation changes. And it's really it's nicely maintained. They really know that they've got a great road, and there's very little cross traffic. So you just have to worry about the road and the people, you know, coming in the opposite direction. And you know, certainly I would never encourage anyone to drive above the posted speed limit. But the speed limits on there are relatively low, and for a reason. You still get a nice thrill ride at 35, 40 miles an hour because it's such a challenging road.
And you want to be careful, especially when you come into populated areas, because there are stretches between little towns along the way, and then you certainly want to slow down for those areas. But, you know, this is an interesting example to start with, because there's, in my mind, a little bit of a dichotomy there. You mentioned motorcycles and cars. And, of course, your book is about both motorcyclists and car enthusiasts, and a lot of those are the same people. But my one experience at Tail of the Dragon, and I emphasize it was only one experience, was that the motorcyclists there were not riding Ducatis or Japanese sport bikes, but mostly Harley-Davidsons and that sort of motorcycle. And they took the road very easy compared with, say, some of the sports car drivers, mm-hmm. Including us and the Porsche Boxster. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a little bit of a tension there between that type of motorcyclist and that type of auto enthusiast on that road, even if you're adhering to the speed limits.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there are people who, you know, it's so close to Florida, which is where the worst motorcyclists in the country live, as far as I'm concerned, because they don't have any curves. They don't have that experience.
Right.
And so they hit a road like Tail of the Dragon, and it's a whole new world to them, and they tend to slow down and ride in packs.
Right.
And, you know, so my best advice about this road is take it on a weekday.
Yes.
You know, stay away from it on the weekends. Any of these roads are completely different on a weekday than on a weekend. So make it a destination that you hit in the middle of the week, and you'll have a much better time.
And maybe go a little bit off season, either early in the spring or into the fall, into late September, early October, or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was your absolute favorite? I mean, you've got PCH, Ortega Highway, Angeles Crest, Natchez Trace. I mean, you've got a whole bunch of roads. Which is your favorite?
I live in Los Angeles, and my favorite road is actually my local highway, which is Angeles Crest. I could ride it or drive it, you know, every day and just never get bored. It's this ever-changing landscape. I love the desert landscape, and I love the big changes in elevation. And I love where it dumps you out. You know, when you're all finished, you can take the highway home. So I really enjoy that road a lot.
So despite the fact that I think every press drive that's in the greater LA area goes on the highway, that doesn't bother you?
That doesn't bother me. I never get bored with this road.
Uh-huh.
I really don't. And there are some, you know, if you're a nature photographer, there are some fantastic landscapes and vistas. There are great, you know, there's a great variety of plants. You can see animals. And I love the fact that that the road actually has some risk. You know, if you challenge this road and you drive above your abilities, the penalties are very high. So
you'll see those plants and animals close up.
Yeah.
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 You'll see them close up, and you will not, you know, you'll not be happy about it.
Yeah. You won't get to the other 99 items on the list because you will have died.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jason, is there an optimum time to take that road to avoid too much traffic?
Oh, it's definitely a weekday, and it's any time. Usually fall and spring are great times. Wintertime, sometimes, believe it or not, the elevations are so high that it sometimes gets closed because of snow,
Okay.
even though it's right here in Southern California. The elevations can go up above 8,000 feet up there.
I love Highway 1, which is also on your list, but I lived in Southern California for a number of years and found that the only time to do Highway 1 anymore is, I think, between Christmas and New Year's. Or maybe the first week of January. And other than that, forget about it.
In the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night or very early in the morning, yes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're looking for this great, fast driving experience, you're not going to find it on Highway 1 anymore, at least that stretch that I described. But the views are so spectacular that I don't mind going a little slower.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful stretch. That's really a great stretch of road. I agree.
And you're kind of talking about great roads from two vantage points, being able to go really fast and have some really great turns, or go slower and have beautiful vistas.
Yeah, I think if you want to really drive fast, there are other sections of the book that you could look at. And I think, you know, to be safe and to really get the most out of your vehicle, if you want to really drive fast, get on a track.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have the loneliest road. So I'd never heard of this loneliest road before. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's a great stretch of road. It's US 50 between Ely, Nevada, and Carson City. And there are stretches. There's a stretch that's, I think, 164 miles without a gas station. There are 136 miles. It is really a chance to get out in the middle of nowhere. You're going to see nobody, and you really, especially if you're in an open top car or on a motorcycle, you're out there in nature, and you get to experience what it would have been like for the stagecoach drivers and the pioneers to cross America, and you get a real respect for that.
Mm. And you also have Going to the Sun Road, which is in, of course, Glacier National Park. Did you have a hard time whittling down the list? Because there's some other national parks with fantastic roads. But I am familiar with Going to the Sun, and that is breathtaking.
I did have a hard time whittling it down. I mean, we were talking before we went on the air about how long it took me to write the book. And I'd have to say that when I sat down to make my list of experiences, I came up with way more than 100 and had to whittle down to that. But Going to the Sun Road is one that would always make my list. Hmm. It actually took me – that's a road that took me four tries, four different trips to get all the way across.
Because they're always reconstructing it.
And there's always weather. I've been turned back by snow, by fog, by ice. And then I finally, my fourth try, I made it through.
That's great. It is really beautiful. So
yeah.
What was your determination to whittle down the list? What was your guidance that you used to get it down to what you did?
Well, I tried to make it geographically approachable. I tried to find as many experiences across the country because living in Southern California, we become very proprietary about our attractions here. But I've lived all over the country, and I realized that there are spectacular experiences to be had all over the country. So I tried to not make it a local book, but make it a national book.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Jason, when you talk about some of these roads and for example, the road, which one was it? Do you have a favorite car or favorite motorcycle that you attach in your mind to taking on these roads? Is there a certain type or even a specific model, if you care to name it?
Well, motorcycling, it's easy for me to talk about because I do most of my touring on Harley-Davidson electric glides. And that's partly because of a job that I have and also partly because it's just a great long-distance touring bike. And I like to go far. And so you want to be comfortable, and you also want to have some maneuverability. And so that's the bike for me.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of cars, I love a Roadster. The Miata is a great vehicle for a long trip, I think. And also it it makes certain that you're not out on a shopping trip because you can't bring much home with you.
Try the fitted luggage. It helps.
Yeah. I also, you know, I'll take any Porsche anywhere.
Yes, a true gearhead. That's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So what other sections?
Well, we want to move on to the auctions. So, I mean, Barrett Jackson certainly is the presumably the granddaddy of them all, I would say.
Yeah, Barrett Jackson's the granddaddy of them all. I'm really getting to like some of the smaller auction houses as well. Auctions America has a great auction that's really rising in stature that happens in Burbank every year now. And, you know, it's great to go to an auction and see those million-dollar cars go across the boards, but it's also cool to see a car that you might actually be able to afford. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not in a buying mood, it's fun to see someone get, you know, that $15,000 VW Beetle or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Auctions America, I have not been to one of their auctions, but it's maybe the most approachable from what I've read in terms of even some four-figure prices are easily achievable. And you mentioned in the book that if you're not one of the bidders, you might not be able to get that close to the action, but that might be a good thing so that you don't make a bid by mistake.
Yeah, it's they've got it set up so that you can't make a bid by mistake. You have to register as a bidder and qualify.
So it's okay to scratch your nose.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So they won't be taking $3.2 million from you.
Yeah, it's a great show. I mean, all these places have realized, and you can see, you know, Meekum's on television, Barrett Jackson's televised. It's entertaining whether you're bidding or not.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break here, Jason, so hold on. We're going to get into more sections of the book and talk about more things of this 100-item list of stuff that gearheads should do before they die. But right now, we're going to give a shout-out to our friends at Bridgestone. Okay, we're back talking with Jason Fogelson about 100 things for every gearhead to do before they die. We were just talking about auctions, but Jason, to be able to get into all the different categories that you wrote about in your book, we'll have to jump into a few more. Maybe the next one we should go to is car museums. And boy, talk about whittling down a list. That must have been tough, or at least you were only working with those in the U.S.
Yeah, I was only working with those in the U.S. because there are some spectacular collections overseas as well that I'd love to include in my next book.
So you were talking earlier about being in Southern California and sort of being a homer for what's going on there. But, you know, being Detroit people here, we definitely have to say that Henry Ford has got a magnificent collection of automobiles. And I know you spent a lot of time there, John, and I'm sure you've...
I've been there many times. Share, yeah. And it's the nice thing about that is that it's in the context of a museum that's not all about cars. Mm-hmm. So it's a central portion of the museum. But it's also about basically everything that interested Henry Ford back in the day and was part of his life and various technologies going back to the late 19th century. And I like it in that context.
That's a multi-day museum visit, isn't it?
It really is. Really is. Because of what Todd just said. I mean, they have aviation. They have...
The trains.
Trains. The... household appliances.
Right. You know.
Well, they have the Buckminster Fuller House.
Yeah, Dymaxion.
Dymaxion House.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's just a nice... And the cars are kind of in the middle of all of that. Mm-hmm.
Was Henry Ford the ultimate gearhead, do you think?
He probably had to have been.
Oh, there were so many back then.
But, you know, I think what's interesting about that, though, is I think a lot of people might think that, oh, it's the Henry Ford Museum, and therefore I'm going to go there and just see a whole bunch of Model Ts and
Ford stuff.
Ford products. And that's not the case at all.
No. I mean, in fact, what I love about the Henry Ford Museum is they actually have an automobile from the 1870s. It was steam-powered. But, when you look at it, it's not all that different from some of the early horseless carriages that had gasoline engines. Right. It was the same concept, just ran on steam.
Well, and they also have the first Honda made in America off the line in their museum. They have Chryslers, they have General Motors cars, they have foreign cars. They just have, and it's also a very good resource. I did some some research for a story on Edsel Ford's Roadster, which is at the Edsel and Eleanor Ford house. And they had an interview with the designer online, and they interviewed several designers who've since left us, and they got them in time to get a lot of stuff on the record, so it helped a lot.
Of course, you know what's interesting is that they have the series of presidential limousines, mm-hmm. but they only have the Lincolns.
Yeah, yeah. But including the Lincoln that Kennedy was assassinated in.
Right.
And I think that's one of the differences. I mean, all museums want to get something that's historical, but the Henry Ford is especially focused on the history of any particular car, ergo having the first Honda Accord ever made in America.
Right, right.
You know, other museums may not go so much for that. They might go for more of the styling or the technology that was in the car.
Right.
But what's your favorite museum there, Jason?
Well, Gary will accuse me of being a homer, but it's always been the Peterson.
Yeah, terrific collection.
It's you know, it's the first place I bring any out of town guest, you know, it's being renovated right now, and I'm very anxious to see how they display the collection after December, because I've been to the museum so many times I have cars that I consider my friends that I like to go back and visit.
You've also got the LeMay Museum, which has got to be probably one of the newest car museums in the country on your list. Why did something so new make it on?
Have you been there?
No, I have not.
Get a plane ticket right now. It's a magnificent collection. The LeMays were almost car hoarders before they started this museum. They had thousands of cars, and they've honed it down quite a bit to a really spectacular collection. There's only a portion of it on display at any one time in this brand new building that was designed specifically as a car museum. And Ken Gross was one of the first curators there. Mm-hmm. He really help them find the historically significant vehicles, and the presentation is also just fantastic.
And where is this museum?
It's in Tacoma, Washington.
Okay. And that's all you needed to tell us, is that Ken Gross was the curator, or one of the curators.
Well, Ken is a friend and a colleague of ours, and also curated the Peterson Museum.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. He's so influential.
Mm-hmm. So that collection, they rotate cars in and out of the museum. Is that right?
That's correct. And
you could go back several times and see something new. Yeah.
Yes, I've been there a couple of times, and it seems like a complete changeover every time I go.
Wow. I think that's true of most museums. You know, the Peterson's got a bunch of cars in the basement. The Henry Ford has got another whole warehouse of stuff too. So, you know, it'd be awesome if those museums could find other places to display their cars. I've often felt the Henry Ford should have a display at Detroit Metro Airport. So when people have got time to kill between flights, they could go see these incredible collections of cars.
That would be nice. It'd be good for reliable, too.
Sorry, while the Peterson's been under renovation, they've been displaying cars at the Ronald Reagan Museum in Simi Valley. And hopefully that's going to go on. They've got a permanent space there.
Okay, let's move on to another category. Why don't we go to new car shows? And again, if you're just limiting it to the U.S., you've got a number on here. I would say there's maybe four in the, you know, Detroit, New York, L.A., Chicago.
And he's got all four of those.
And you got all four. And then you've got a motorcycle show on there, too. Tell us about that.
Well, the motorcycle shows are a little different than the car shows. Actually, not that different, but there's one company that puts on all of the new motorcycle shows, and it's a traveling exhibit. I really love it, and it may be bigger in your city, smaller in your city, but it travels for about 4 months and goes all across the country. So I highly recommend any motorcycle fan go out for that.
I've never heard of it. Have you guys heard of it?
No.
So how do you find out about it? Because I've never heard of it.
Well, buy my book. I've got the information in there. You could Google Progressive International Motorcycle Shows, and you'll get the schedule. It's usually over the winter, which is great, especially, you know, for those looking for a motorcycling fix during the winter. If you're in a cold climate, you can go and pick out your next new bike, see some classics, buy some accessories. It's really a fun show.
Look, I'm from Milwaukee. I've never been to the Harley Museum, so I know is a big oversight. I need to go, but there's that motorcycle versus car thing, and I like motorcycles, but I'm not a rider. Mm-hmm.
But that's so true of not going to the Harley Museum.
Yeah.
People often never go to the coolest stuff that's in their immediate area.
Right, yeah.
You know, they'll travel to go see other things before they go see historic things in their own backyards.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So you have the classic car shows, Autorama at the beginning of your list, and that is held in Detroit every year. And so describe that to those who are not familiar with Autorama, because it defies description so far as I'm concerned.
Well, believe it or not, that's one that's that I can describe, but not from firsthand experience.
Oh.
I haven't been to it. So that's one of my 13 left to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have been to it. You know, if you're into hot rodding of any sort, if you're into car customization, that is the show to go to.
And they always have something that is a sort of a marquee item, like a Batmobile or some you know,
they'll bring that,
some Barrett's creation there that really shows the extremes.
But they also give out the Riddler Award, which amongst car customizers it's like winning the Oscars. Mm. I mean, that's what you go for. Here we've got a modified split window vet up there. Chip Foose seems to win the award every other year or so or something like that. It really attracts people who truly are artisans when it comes to customizing cars. And I know from having talked to some of the hot rod crowd, boy, that Riddler Award, that's like mm-hmm. you've died and gone to heaven if you win that.
Mm. And the value of those cars can be astronomical as well.
They can, although it's funny, you know, usually whoever does all the customization pours a fortune into it and never gets the money that they put into it. It's always, you know, probably like the third collector who starts to make money off those kinds of cars.
It's like restoring a car, too. It's the same thing,
yeah.
Right?
And speaking of restoring a car, you've got a lot of Concours d'Elegance on your list as well. Which do you like most?
I'm a real big fan of Pebble Beach, as is everyone in that sport. But I have to say that my favorite is Des Moines. I really love the small town concours because there are some of the greatest surprises. What people are doing, you know, in their barns and in their garages in small towns is just, you know, rather than throwing all the money in the world at a car, they're throwing all their effort at a car.
Yeah. I've never heard of the Des Moines.
I hadn't either.
There's another one. So there's one I'll add to my list.
Excellent.
And what do you make of, you know, in amongst car collectors now, there's this big argument of preservation versus restoration, i.e., instead of taking something down to the chassis and redoing it, just get it going and save that patina of history that it may have.
I think it's all cyclical. I think you see the same thing. You can look at an analogy in the antiques world. I remember when I was a kid, my grandfather was very much into refinishing furniture. And now that's a horrible thing to do. We want patina. We want originality. But who knows in 20 years and 30 years what the fashion's going to be. I think the key with cars, as with anything, is using them and enjoying them. I think if you're looking at an automobile as an investment, then you're not really an enthusiast, as far as I'm concerned. You're an investor. But if you're looking at a car as a vehicle toward experiences and as a loved member of the family, then do exactly what will make you happy.
Since people have finite time and finite resources, it occurs to me you have auctions, museums, car shows, and concours. So from your point of view, which would you recommend that people do first to get the biggest bang for their buck?
Well, I'm a really big fan of museums because it's a curated experience. And so I think if you want to learn and experience the history of something and really get something that's authenticated by experts, I think a museum is a great pathway into cars. And then I would expand out to classic car shows and concours, because you'll have some basis to know what it is that you're looking at.
Yeah, because then you can always talk to the owner, or often talk to the owner, and get the whole history of the thing and what attracted them to it in the first place.
Yeah, and the more you do it, you'll discover, you'll discover that you have an affinity for a certain kind of car. You may be a muscle car person. You may be like the brass era of automobiles. You may like new cars the best. Who knows? But you won't know until you get out and experience and see a wide variety.
And then you'll end up at an auction, and you'll be buying these cars.
And then you'll take it to Tale of the Dragon, and you'll have the whole book complete just about.
Well, and there again, you might also want to get a track experience in early while you're still relatively young, and it helps your driving, your abilities to drive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about track experiences, because that's one of the categories, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So there's a lot of driving schools out there and different types of driving. I mean, whether it's oval or road racing, again, of all the driving experiences at driving schools, what did you really like?
Well, I really got a lot out of Bondurant. And I really think that the emphasis on safety and traction management is really just really important and something that I use every time I drive. That said, one of the ones I really want to do is Bobby Orr Motorsports, which is a stunt driving class.
Yeah, I like you got several. Rich Siemens stunt, Drivers Each, the high performance stunt, extreme stunt.
So yeah.
Are these for like Hollywood people who take these?
You want to drive through a loop of fire? Is that it?
No, they're actually, some of them are for people who really want to be in the movies and want to learn how to drive that. But others are just, it's a really cool experience to explore the limits of your abilities and the car in a safe situation.
Unlike on the Angeles Crest.
Not on the Angeles Crest.
Yeah. Hey, hold your thoughts. I want to come back and talk more about this, but we're going to take another quick commercial break right now because we've got to give a shout out to our friends at... Let's see, we've got Chrysler and Hyundai.
We could tell you about the years of research and development, how we forged advanced high-strength steel to make the frame stronger yet lighter, the countless hours spent testing the suspension and tuning every sound from the engine to the trunk. But until you get behind the wheel, you have no idea. The completely redesigned Hyundai Sonata.
It's a calling. A love affair. A quest. The next horizon. Everyone. Loves the chase.
Okay, we're back here, and when we last left, I had pictures of you driving on two wheels going to one of these stunt schools. There's something I've always wanted to do, Jason.
That whole two-wheel experience, absolutely.
I've never done that in my life. That's one of the few things I've never done with a car, get it up on two wheels.
Oh, that would be awesome. And at Bobby Orr, you get to do that.
And where's that school located?
Well, he moves from track to track, but mostly on the West Coast.
Okay. Hmm.
And do you get up on two wheels in that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's something I've got to do then. Okay, I've added something to the list here.
You're a budding Joey Chitwood, John.
Yeah. Hey, Chip, the producer here, tells us you've done some work with celebrities as well.
There are some interviews in the book. A few celebrities who are also gearheads were kind enough to give me a few minutes and talk about how they became gearheads.
Okay, drop some names here.
Well, we've got Jay Leno, of course.
Of course. So Jay's got to be gearhead number one in the nation, right?
He is, and so generous with his time and just loves to talk cars. And his interview was one I had to edit down substantially because he just talked and talked, which is great.
Do you have any idea how many cars he owns?
I would have to guess that it's close to 700 or 800.
Wow.
I mean, I've been to his collection and it's mind boggling and very difficult to make a count.
Yeah.
He probably doesn't know, but I know he's always buying, he's always in the market for something new.
Yeah, he, you know, he's a great example of why you should not have kids.
Okay, who else?
Alonzo Bowden, who is a stand-up comedian and motorcycle and car enthusiast. Just another really great guy who has a real gearhead bent. He went to high school in New York City at a vocational school and became an airplane mechanic and worked at Lockheed for years before he became a stand-up comedian, which is an interesting background.
Boy, isn't it? Wow. I've never heard of an engineer be that funny.
He's hilarious and really knowledgeable.
Yeah, he's good on the show hosted by one of your other celebrities, which I enjoy every Saturday morning.
Right, he's on Peter Sagal's show. Peter, very few people know, used to write for a motorcycle magazine, and is really, you know, that there he is with his own bike. He has a Triumph that he loves, and it's really, you know, he's an interesting guy. I've known him for going on 25 years now.
And he's not a car guy. He says in your book that he's not interested in any more than two wheels.
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. But he's very smart about it, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Ferrara, who's one of the hosts of Top Gear USA, is also in the book.
Also a fan of Outline After Hours. He told me himself.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, if he's watching, thanks for being in the book, Adam.
Yeah.
And then we've also got Derek Jenkins, who is the chief designer for Mazda and a tremendously talented guy. And he's going to be all over the place this year with the new MX-5.
Right. Yeah. And even the CX-3, I suppose, too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So
yeah,
these
I'm
are all,
that next week. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Are these people that you all reached out to or you knew anyway, or how did they get included in the book?
They're people that I reached out to who I had met or had a connection to. Yeah, absolutely. Hmm. And people who I knew would be smart and love sharing their experience in the same way that I do.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So another category that you have in your book, which I think people might find somewhat surprising, is factory tours. And you have quite a number of them in your book, going from BMW to Harley to Shelby. I mean, talk to us about that.
For me, a factory tour is the ultimate gearhead experience. It's like being inside the machine. You're inside a machine that makes other machines. How great is that?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times these things are, the factory tours are small groups. They're quite proprietary. They won't let you take pictures. They don't let you take videos. They just want you to come and experience it. And it's something you have to, you know, going through a great big factory is something that you not only see and hear, you also smell it and you feel it in your muscles and bones. You know, when two great big pieces of metal come together to form a door, you feel that. It's a very, very cool experience.
Mm-hmm. So, John, I'll bet you from this list you've been in almost every single one of these.
I may have.
BMW.
Yeah.
Bowling Green, where they make the Corvette.
Yeah.
Ford Rouge, where they make the F-150.
I worked at the Ford Rouge.
There you go.
Oh, great.
The GM Fairfax plant in Missouri.
Yeah, been there, too.
Honda, Alabama.
Not to Alabama,
but
no.
To Marysville.
Oh, Marysville many times, right.
Hyundai in Alabama.
Yeah, I actually was there.
Mercedes plant.
I've not been to the Mercedes one.
I've been to the Mercedes.
You've been there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nissan Smyrna?
Yep.
Shelby facility in Nevada?
Nope, have not been there.
Subaru in Lafayette,
No, I've not been there either.
Toyota Georgetown?
Yep.
Mack Trucks, I don't know where that's at. You know, I didn't write that down in my blue book.
Mack Trucks, isn't that somewhere on the East Coast, isn't it?
Pennsylvania, I think, right?
Yeah.
And we know that Todd did not go to the Harley Museum. Or the Harley factory, excuse me.
I'd like to go, but...
And then the Victory and Indian Manufacturing Facility?
Yeah.
So how big is that?
It's pretty big. Really? They're making a lot of bikes in Spirit Lake, Iowa. There's a lot of manufacturing going on there. They're selling, you know, in the five figures of bikes.
No idea.
For both brands.
That's where, hey, you must have been in most of those plants too, Gary.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I figured as much. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. No, I think they're great places to see how things come together, as you say. And I think a lot of people just look at the object at the very end and say, "Wow, this is cool," or "This sucks," or whatever. But boy, when you see these people who are given, you know, day after day after day building these things, and you get a whole new appreciation for what goes into what we take for granted in many cases.
And I think I beat both of you to the Ford plant because I dragged my parents to let me see it when I was 7 years old, I think. They were just starting the production of the 66 Ford Mustangs.
Mm-hmm.
I took my first plant tour of the Rouge when I was 6 years old.
Oh, okay.
Well, he got his job when he was seven.
Yeah.
That's where the career, you know, this whole automotive thing started with
him. It may well have.
But the Ford tour now, though, is for the F-150, and you get to see the growing roof that they have on the plant.
The sedum on the roof,
yes,
right?
Yes, and so it's a whole different thing from when you were wandering around back in the day.
Well, now it's connected to the Henry Ford, so
That's right.
You do is you go to the Henry Ford Museum and you get your tickets there, and then they shuttle you over to the Rouge plant.
On
so
bus,
you
yeah.
get a twofer. You get to knock off two of your 100 in
That's
one
right.
in
yeah.
one bite.
Absolutely.
That's pretty good. So
if you come in January, you can go to Autorama, and you can go to the...
The North
American International Auto Show. Yeah.
There you go.
Great.
Then,
Gary, do you have a guest room? Gary?
Yeah, I've got one.
Okay.
So we could do that, and then land speed records is one of your categories too. That's very interesting because that's something on my bucket list. I got to get to Salt Lake someday.
Yeah,
to the
too.
Salt Flats.
I've never been either. You've not been there?
No, I've been to Salt Lake. I should say I've not been to the Salt Flats.
Same
and
here.
The Salt Flats are disappearing, right?
They are disappearing, and this year has been a really tough one weather-wise. El Mirage was canceled this year, and they're talking about the possibility of Bonneville being canceled as well. I think we better get out there and support these events while we can, because it's really one of the last really grassroots efforts. It's a fantastic experience.
I like the recommendation in your book where you caution people that they're going to get salt in everything. I think that
it's a good argument for a rental car.
Yeah, and you know, I like your point too of supporting grassroots because, to me, you know, look, I love motor racing, F1, Le Mans, all that, Indy, NASCAR, but it's so corporate, you know, it's so managed, and that's why it's so cool to see grassroots people run what they brung. You know, that they built in their garage with their own blood, sweat, and tears. I love that approach to it.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about the Salt Flats and the SCTA is that there are so many categories for land speed records, and they're very specific. You know, there's like fuel injected, carbureted, two valves per cylinder, four valves per cylinder, that you can find a niche for a vehicle that you can afford to build and take out there and challenge a land speed record yourself if you really catch the bug.
Cool. Well, you know, we haven't covered everything that's in your book, but I think we've given our viewers a really good overview of what you've got. And it's pretty cool because when I first saw, you know, the title, you know, 100 things, blah, blah, blah. I thought, oh, crikey, you know, where'd they come up with this? And as I got into it, it was like, oh, yeah, there's one that I really want to do. And, oh, yeah, that's right, I've forgotten about that one. So it's pretty cool that you put together such a comprehensive list.
Well, thank you. I'm really glad to hear that experts in the field are appreciating it, and I really hope that, you know, regular book buyers will appreciate it as well, because that was the intent of the book, is to share these experiences, inspire people, and get people out there doing things.
Cool. That's great. Well, Jason Fogelson, we've been running up on the screen here where they can get your book, and I'm sure that more than a few of our audience are definitely going to check it out.
I welcome them, and if they'd like to get their book personalized, there's a field in the order form, and I'd be happy to personalize any book for
awesome.
Anyone that. Yeah,
cool, Jason. Thanks so much for your time. It's been
thanks
very interesting.
Me.
Good deal.
You may want to say the website out loud for the audio podcast.
Oh yeah, that's right. Our producer Ben just reminded me. I'm going to say this out loud because a lot of people listen to this on audio tape. So it's www.booksforgearheads.com. Okay,
right.
We got it there. Jason, thanks again.
Thank you.
So, what do you guys think?
There's a lot of stuff to do that, things like jobs and, no, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I'll make it to 100, but I'm happy to say that I'm still making my way through that list. And
when's the next time you're going to Milwaukee?
Probably Christmas time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're always very short visits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a certain pizza joint we need to go to. We need to get frozen custard when we're there at Leon's. And I'll have to plan the time ahead, but it, from the road, passing it by, it looks like a magnificent museum. I've heard nothing but good about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what's cool about this, I've got an upcoming trip where I've got to run out to Seattle. Maybe I'll try to pop down to Tacoma and see that LeMay Museum.
Yeah.
So I might use this book as a reference as I'm traveling, you know, look it up and say, hey, I'm going to this, there, or the other place.
Right.
I wonder if there's anything on Jason's list that I should go check out.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, Gary, we've got another great show under our belts here.
Indeed.
Good. Let's do it again next week.
All right.
Okay.
Sure.
We'll do that. I want to thank everybody for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Ram Trucks, the ones with the guts to stand apart, join a league all their own. Guts, glory, Ram. And by Hyundai. Learn more at Hyundai.com.
Visit our website, Autoline.tv, where you can watch us live. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at Autoline.tv.